Hi everyone, Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Alright, I want to start off this part two discussing something which I probably should have discussed earlier. I've talked about it in other videos, but we're going to confront it a lot here as we continue in this particular Go Show, as we do quite often anyway, but I haven't talked about it in a while, so let me give you a bit of a lens, if you will, as I often do, try to offer more modern or present day understanding of things, issues that we confront a lot in these translations, because these translations are done by, in large part, by Westerners from earlier, certainly, Asian sources. But be that as it may, we certainly, if you're watching my videos, are an English-speaking person, whether it's your native language or not. And there are, as languages transfer boundaries in the East and West, North and South, and there are dialectical differences, and therefore translations are always subject to interpretation, right? So certainly that's far evident in Western translations, especially as cultural realities and training are sometimes insurmountable in our ability to grasp with another civilization, another culture, another peoples were set out to discuss or describe or understand. And as we pursue meaning in Buddhism, this is something we confront all the time. So the two main things I want to talk about is the issue of time, which in the West, and now globally, but I mean in print and how we talk as a society, as a peoples, we think about time in different ways, certainly, but conceptually, in a very large sense, we understand time very differently. And the other part of that, which is related to time, is genealogy, how we pass on not only traits. I mean, we're very fond of saying you have your mother's eyes and your dad's whatever. But not as much. That's quite common, but not as common is you have your grandmother's this or that, or your grandfather's this or that, let alone great-grandfather traits. In the West, I don't know about you, but unless your family is very engaged in genealogy, there's very little discussion of how your ancestry reflects itself in your life. And that's the proper, I think, perspective or Western rhetoric around which we should view the discussions of these hundreds, thousands of years old discussion about Buddhist practice and the influence and the heritage and the transmission of the meaning of Buddhism. I almost said teachings, and I think we get lost in that word, because the fundamental from day one in Buddhist teaching, which is really, I apologize. Or as I often say, the self-learning of Buddhism, is this idea of homage, or as you might say, homage. So as it pertains to Buddhism, to clarify, if you're not following me so far, This idea of previous existences or future existences, or in a more direct sense, as we'll, I mean, we'll touch on that in this Go Show, we already have, but also the idea of seeds and harvest. I think to a modern person, seeds and harvest is an abstract of farming, certainly. But even from personal gardening, we're familiar with the passage of time, and this is all about time, the passage of time of when we create a body of soil, whether it's in a pot or in a field, that can support, that has, in other words, the nutrients in it to be able to feed some nascent energy in a seed, or a bulb or whatever, that you can nurture with that soil and other nutrients and water and sunlight, to grow and continue to grow and mature into something that can provide nutrition itself, food for the circle of life, for you and I, for animals, so on and so forth. And so that's the harvest, right? Or you might call it post-harvest, the feeding, whatever. But still, this passage of time and the effort, more to the point, of investing in a future production. This idea is extremely important in all of the teachings of Buddhism from day one to Nichiren and to today, as I speak to you. So the idea that seeds have been planted in previous existences is something we contend with in the writings all the time. So what I want to do, and the way I've talked about this in the past, is to explain that life is a moment-to-moment thing. That we leave one moment and it dies or goes into extinction as it completes passing on its huge trove of traits and ideas and attachments and what have you to the next moment, which we are experiencing even as each sound wave of each letter of each word that I'm saying is also dying and passing on to the next moment. And this happens so quickly that our perceptive mind, our human perceptive mind, we can't see it. We can't interrupt it. The only thing that we can do that is available to it is to influence that constant flow of birth and death, birth and death, birth and death, birth and death. So I've talked about this quite a lot. I have videos specifically addressing it. It's part of larger subjects like the 3,000 realms and so forth. This idea of the passage of time, which is both unfathomably fast, but also heavy and weighted by a perception of a longer perception of time that is historical. In Buddhism, both of those concepts, both ends of those concepts, if you will, they collapse. And so let me explain what I mean by collapsing. When Nichiren talks about the seeds that the Buddha planted in the former days of the law, or the middle days of the law, and the time of sowing and the time of harvest, and all of these beautiful analogies, they can seem to obfuscate our truth. And there's that word, truth. So really, I really need to go and 'cause I continue to edit these voluminous writings and translations to clarify in a modern way what words like truth and faith and those kind of things that we're very accustomed to hearing in the West, but they're charged with all kinds of characterizations and charisma that really mislead our Buddhist practice. Truth in Buddhism is really about, in some cases, the word actuality would be much more accurate. But actuality is an experiential thing, right? So is truth. But truth has a mysticism attached to it that says this is beyond your capacity to understand. You're just a recipient of it. And Buddhism just isn't that. It's never that. Buddhism is about an experienced truth, an actual experience, a profound validation through one's own worldview. So we try in the West to disguise that mysticism with a personal truth or our truth, but the word truth still hangs on to this kind of comes from outside of you, and that's just not Buddhism. So I will be endeavoring to make those edits at some point. Just be aware. Just as I want you to be aware that time, when Buddhism talks about previous existences, it's really only talking about the influences of time and whether in your daily life, and certainly you can understand that from Eastern studies, we find that most cultures, even in the Eastern Western countries, the border of the East, the older cultures, let me say it that way, civilizations throughout time on this globe have, in one way or another, given great reverence to their ancestors. Now, though you may feel some abstract indebtedness or connection to your ancestry, in the West today, it's really about like our DNA. Like the peoples of Africa spreading throughout the continent and the migrations of peoples throughout the world. And we see that, but we're not really personally connected to it. In Buddhism, you're dealing with cultures that are very personally connected to it, pay homage to it. Excessively, you might say, but no, nonetheless, you have to understand that that influences the rhetoric. The way they talk about who they are is inclusive of ancestry. We don't do that. We're in the modern day world entirely, and certainly in Western cultures, we're very much about the I ego. I am a self-made da da da, right? We never look at what we accomplish in life from the lens of all of the paths, be it sacrifices or accomplishments, of our great, 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 and right? We don't think that way. But that kind of thinking permeates a lot of what we read, if not most of what we read in Buddhism. And so, from that kind of lens, that kind of interpretation of this life moment, comes the idea of previous existence. Because in some shape or form, my platform, my way of being, my way of speaking to you, comes from ancestry that goes back through France, England, Europe, entirely Asia, Middle Eastern, whatever, all the way back to Mother Africa, right? So that's a very strange concept for Westerners to integrate into our daily thinking. We can talk about it, and it can be a moment of fascination and go, wow, I wonder where this came from. But it's not in our daily logical thoughts, right? In these older writings, it still is. It still is a matter of actually describing yourself in a larger sense, which has all of the baggage that that entails. There's some baggage of history, there's some baggage of owning up to, or being responsible for, or just paying deep, deep respect for this now current ability or insight, or you see what I'm talking about here? And it all boils down to, and I speak in very modern terms, because I think to you and I today, to say that we're influenced is a shorthand, but an effective shorthand, because you and I understand influence, right? To whatever degree, we understand that we're influenced by our own actions and thoughts and things that we assimilate over time. Certainly, I can come up with very rudimentary examples that, when you burn yourself, you inform yourself and you influence yourself to guard yourself against a future activity that will inevitably end up inflicting this same pain, right? That's very rudimentary. But in another way, a lot of what forms not just our opinions, but the way that we form our opinions comes from character traits developed that we can identify within our own relations, our own near field, if you will, in time terms, relations through our parents or brothers and sisters or teachers, or books that we've read. Where we've made categorical changes in our perspective. And that's all influence, right? So I hope that makes this a little less foggy to try to negotiate the rhetoric in here. But stay aware that that's what this rhetoric revolves around. It's not actually that I lived 10,000 years ago, and the actions I took then influenced the way I am now. But in a sense, biologically, I cannot deny that the very molecules of my body follow a birth, an actual physical birth, a samsaric birth and death. All the way back through tens of thousands of years of ancestry. How those influence me are basically the fact that I'm here today in this society, in this time. How deeply they inform the way I think, I don't know. I can only create an aura about that. But that has the potential negative of taking me away from experiencing this moment as real and within my function at this point to be. And to the degree that I can work with that and influence that, I influence just as deeply that karmic chain into my ancestry. This is why in the fifth meditation, when we do Gongyo, we consider ancestry, not because we have to individuate them as individuals, but because we pay homage to the very life force that has spawned us in this moment. We didn't just drop out of the sky. And even if we did, the sky itself has an origin and an origin beyond that. So this is what Buddhism pays homage to constantly, either through human samsaric existence or all of the samsaric instantiation. There is always a causal relationship, even to the very origin. Or what some would call the original cause of life itself, right? So this is a very big subject, and I approach it from this way and from that way and all around it. And sometimes I talk about that process itself, the 3,000 realms. But understand that that kind of thinking, that responsibility for this moment. And the birth of this moment, Ichin and Sanzen, and the implications of this moment into the future are constant points point of reference in Buddhism. And actually, I would, you know, I hate using this term because it's so much overused and misused in modern society. But from this point of view is what comes the idea of mindfulness. Because what we are trying to be mindful of is that very thing, that each and every moment is in itself incredibly precious, as not only whatever came before it to influence its current state, but the influence that we put on that and the onus we put on that singular moment we are now just traveling through to influence it in a positive, life-giving human way toward the Buddha way into the future. The onus of that is immense, because you can't think of yourself uniquely without considering the entirety of everything that exists. This, to come at it from a different way, it suggests the oneness of Buddhist thought. That oneness is far more expansive than you can imagine in your own oneness. In fact, that your own oneness is the samsaric delusion that is the primary attachment that distances us from our Buddha nature. That individuation, though it's precious and important, because it creates this human samsaric perception to then perceive the greater one of life itself, is far more expansive than we can conceptualize in our one moment of existence. And yet, we are a result of it, as well as an influence to it going forward. Time. So, with that perspective in mind, let's continue. Nichiren writes, "In the past, Bodhisattva, never disparaging, was beaten with sticks and staves for the sake of the Lotus Sutra, and was at once able to attain the supreme stage of perfect enlightenment. Now I, Nichiren, for the sake of the same sutra, have in this lifetime been attacked with swords and staves, and have twice been banished to distant places. Can there be any doubt, therefore, that in the future I will attain the wonderful fruit of Buddhahood? After the passing of the Thus Come One, Shakyamuni, the four ranks of bodhisattvas appeared in the former and middle days of the law, and worked to propagate the Lotus Sutra." Now that's historically correct. "But even at those times, they encountered numerous persecutions. The 20th of Shakyamuni's successors, Bodhisattva Aryadeva, was killed, and the 25th, the venerable Aryasimha, had his head cut off. The 8th successor, Buddhamitra, and the 13th Bodhisattva Nagarjuna, each carried a red flag and stood before the entrance to the ruler's palace in hopes of attracting his notice, the former for 12 years and the latter for 7. So he's illustrating resolute conviction in the teaching. That's all that's about. It's not about these individuals' lifetimes as humans, but he's pointing to cause. He's pointing to, if you're pointing to something that's actual, that's true, that's of proof in daily life, it often runs counter to the illusions, delusions, and magical thinking of those who attain power or who feel threatened by losing whatever power they have. So they always react, and there's always repercussions from those acts, but that doesn't sully what you're doing. So that's what this is all about. Chu Taoseng was banished to a mountain in Shuzhou. The priest Fa Zhu was murdered. The Tripitaka master Fa Tao was branded on his face, and the Dharma teacher Hui Yuan was berated and accused. The great teacher Tendai confronted in debate the leaders of 10 schools of the North and South China, and the great teacher Dengyo refuted the erroneous views of the 6th school of Nara. You can see where Nichiren got his example, as he refutes the teachings of his day, right? Depending upon whether these men lived in the time of a wiser ruler or a foolish one, their views were accepted or rejected, but in no case were they untrue to the Buddha's will. In other words, they were preaching and teaching that the unadulterated, as read teachings. They weren't modifying them for personal gain or protection or influence other than the influence of the correct teachings. That's what they were endeavoring to do. And although they all did it, whether they were working in the under the social constraints of a crazy ruler or an enlightened one, their influence either penetrated a great many or very few, and they were either ridiculed a bit or murdered. I mean, so this is what he's talking about. This is the past history of the transmission of Buddhism. It hasn't been an easy road. It's not like people start talking about the Lotus Sutra and everyone just fell to their knees and thought, oh, this is amazing, right? It depends on the circumstances. Are the people ready to hear it? Is the country ready to hear it? So again, we hear this from different angles all the time about Buddhism. Is teaching to people's capacity and the country's capacity, the culture's capacity. A lot of things have to come together in order for people to hear the obvious, to understand the attainable actual, is that truth? Do you see where the words get in the way sometimes? Even during the former and middle days of the law, they encountered such persecutions. He goes on. How much more likely, then, is one to meet persecutions in the latter day? For the sake of the Lotus Sutra, I have already met with the wrath of the authorities, but I count that as the greatest good fortune. It is like exchanging tiles and rubble for gold and silver. And yet, I cannot help but grieve at the words of the Benevolent King's Sutra that, quote, once the sages have departed, then the seven disasters are certain to arise, end quote. The seven disasters include major and great military uprisings. Now, as I read on in this, perhaps you will, as I do, see the tremendous corollaries in our world today. Even though this was written in the 13th century, so much of what is going on in the world today and in our own backyards is described here. So hang on. The Sovereign King's Sutra, he continues, quote, because evil people are respected and favored and good people are subjected to punishment, the stars and constellations along with the winds and rains all fail to move in their proper season, end quote. Now who is meant by, quote, evil people who are respected and favored, end quote? It is men such as I spoke of earlier. And who is meant by good people? Quote, good people who are subjected to punishment, end quote. Now, Nichiren is going to point to himself here because he's answering to a question. about his authenticity, but think about it as yourself and what you're trying to do with your life and the people in your environment, in our governments, in our institutions that stand in our way. Think of what's happening. It's not implausible. It's very, very real to our lives. This is why Buddhism is such a powerful teaching. It's very, very in this moment. He continues, "It is the one whom I mentioned above, who has, quote, again and again been banished, end quote." And the passage on the, quote, stars and constellations, end quote, refers to the strange and portentous occurrences that have taken place in the skies and on the earth during the past 20 years or so. If these passages from the sutras are true, report actual facts, then the banishment of Nichiren is a portent that foretells the downfall of the nation. Even before I incurred the wrath of the authorities, I foresaw that this would happen and stated the reason in the Rishon Kokuran, remember, the on establishing the correct teaching for the peace of the land, Gosho, or treatise. Who can doubt that what I say is true? And that is why I grieve. It has now been 2,222 years since the passing of the Buddha. During the 1,000 years of the former day of the law, Nagarjuna, Vasubandhu, and others acted as the Buddha's envoys, propagating his teaching. However, they propagated only the two teachings of Hinayana and the provisional Mahayana, and did not propagate the teachings of the true Mahayana, the culminating Mahayana, the ultimate Mahayana. Some 500 years after the beginning of the middle day of the law, the great teacher Tendai appeared in China. You see, he appeared in China. Again, remember how we need to think about time here. Tendai is not just an individual person who appeared in China. He appeared as a result of a great chain of events of ancestry and humanity. And so here he comes in this moment at this time, and he explores his particular insight. And obviously, it's because he, as well as everyone else, is at the time and place where it needs to be understood. Does that make sense? So when we talk about the time and the capacity and the place, this is what we mean in Buddhism. It's not that we just happen to stumble across it. It's that all energies converge for this to be known, for this to be told in a time, in a way that applies to the current time and understanding and the capacity. The earth itself has a capacity. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. If the earth didn't have the capacity, the tendencies and the conditions to support human life, then would we not be here? We wouldn't. So everything converges for this moment to be. Tendai appeared in China, refuted erroneous views of the schools of North and South. In the area of doctrinal studies, he propounded the theory of the five periods. And in the area of meditative practices, he set forth the concept of 3,000 realms in a single moment of life, a single thought moment. All of China joined in praising him as a, quote, little Shakyamuni, end quote. This is how revered his idea and his understanding of the teachings were, but also that he was in an environment that could perceive it. So the two don't exist independently. Be mindful that we are not an individual within a whole, that we are an outgrowth of the whole, individuated by our samsaric understanding. That's hard to grasp, but you will come across it constantly if you look for it as you study Buddhism. However, though he propounded perfect meditation and perfect wisdom, he did not spread the perfect precepts. What does that mean? Then, 1800 years after the passing of the Buddha, the great teacher Dengyo appeared in Japan and refuted the erroneous views that had been held by the six schools of Buddhism during the 200 or more years since the time of Emperor Kimei. In addition, he propounded the precepts of the perfect and immediate enlightenment that Tendai had not yet spread. These are the great precepts of the perfect and immediate enlightenment administered at the ordination platform on Mount Hiei. So what does that mean? It means the understanding that Buddhahood and Buddha-ness is here extant, has always been here extant, and is now to be understood to be attainable by all beings. Right now, this isn't some distant wish or some distant star or something to be accomplished. It's to be attained. Attained because it is here and now. Perfect immediate enlightenment means right now in this moment, as you're passing it by, is an opportunity wasted to see your life through this lens, perfectly enlightened. It's accomplished by removing self-delusions, delusions of oneness as individuated from all. All is one. This is hard to describe in words. But this is what Buddhism revolves around, especially the ultimate teachings of Mahayana, is that you've been here all along. You simply need to become aware of it, awaken to this reality, and everything else will stop to weigh on you. Everything else will simply be an observation of the process of life, of which we are active in instantiators. We activate this thing called life, and to realize that this life is not ours alone, but life in general, that we are but a wave on the ocean. Yes, we are waves, and it allows us to perceive ourselves as part of the ocean, but a wave is the ocean. There would be no wave without ocean. So this is what we are. We are the one wave, which is not one, but part of one. And so we have the unique perspective as human beings to see that. And that is why our human birth and our human samsaric existence is so unfathomably wonderful. Because without it, we would not be able to perceive it. We simply would be the ocean. Moreover, a non-Buddhist of India once said, quote, 100 years after I passed away, after I pass away, the Buddha will appear in the world, end quote. And a Confucian scholar predicted, quote, 1,000 years from now, the Buddha's teachings will be transmitted to China, end quote. Thus, even such predictions by ordinary persons, in other words, persons who don't pursue the Buddhist method, are found totally with the truth, in other words, with actual fact. How much more trustworthy, therefore, should be the pronouncements of such persons as Dengyo and Tendai, who say nothing of the explicit predictions that came from the golden mouths of the Buddha's Shakyamuni and many treasures. You must understand this. The time has come for the Lord of the Essential Teaching, who had not appeared yet, to make his advent, and for the five characters of Myoho Renge Kyo, which have never before been propagated, to be spread throughout Jambudvipa. Can any doubt exist? So what he's saying is, you know, fine, my time is here to do this, but it's not me. Look at the history of thousands of years of teachings of Buddhism, it's always been there. It's just that at this moment in time, it's time to talk about it. It's time to spread it. It's time to open our eyes to this ultimate truth. And I just happen to be the primary spokesman at this time, but I am a function of this needing to happen. I didn't invent it. And this is constant with Nietzsche. He's always reminding people that he's just a humble human. But because this is the time, and he finds himself to be the voice, doesn't make him the creator of it. It makes him the perfect enunciator of it, and his responsibility not to back away or shy away from doing so, because it's obviously the time for it. So that's taken on a much larger than, quote, self responsibility, isn't it? And taking on that kind of responsibility, though it's the time for it, doesn't mean that it's not going to run against a lot of people's feathers, ruffle a lot of feathers, create him a lot of pain, but all the more reason to validate that it needs to be done. It's kind of like putting disinfectant on a cut. You can leave the lesion alone and hope that it heals, but it may not. If it's time to heal a lesion, then it's time to put disinfectant on it, burn the bugs, if you will, and your body will react. You will feel stinging, you will feel pain, but you will heal much more quickly, if at all. Right? However, he continues, there are persons who have repeatedly heard about these matters from the priest Nietzsche, and yet know that I have met with these great difficulties, have abandoned their resolute mind and conviction. Now he's saying, look, just because you see me going through these trials, don't lose your resolution. Don't you lose your conviction. Don't you lose your confidence that this is the time and the place for you to learn and understand the meaning of Buddhist method at this profundity. Don't shy away just because I'm suffering through stuff. See it as validation. See it as this must be ultimate practice. You, on the other hand, have heard my teachings only once or twice, and then only for an hour or two. Even so, I've been told that you have not yet abandoned your resolute mind and conviction, but continue to practice. This cannot be solely due to the causes formed in your present existence. Now, here we go with what I was saying earlier. The great teacher Miao Lo stated, quote, therefore we know it is because of seeds planted in previous existences that in the latter age one is able to hear the law even for an instant, and having heard it, take resolute mind and conviction in it, end quote. He also said, quote, having been born at the end of the middle day of the law, I have been able to behold these true words of the sutra. Unless one has planted the wonderful and difficult to understand cause in a previous existence, they are truly difficult to encounter, end quote. So this is that homage to everything that brought you to this day. Because for you to hear these words of the Lotus Sutra, to take to account your practice and this perfect method of attainment here and now of your Buddhahood, your Buddha-ness, is thankful to your mother and father, your brothers and sisters, your grandparents on both sides, your great-great-grand, and so on and so forth. They may never have heard of Buddhism, but whatever aspects they had in their karmic instantiation, in their human existence, in samsara, allowed for the potential of a you to happen. So in that way, you need to honor their existence, because without their particular life existence, yours would not be as it is today, practicing Buddhism. Do you see? The Lotus Sutra says, in essence, that persons who in past existences have made offerings to 100,000 million Buddhas will be reborn in the human world, will be reborn into the human world and take resolute mind and conviction in this lotus. The Nirvana Sutra states, in essence, that persons who give alms to as many Buddhas as there are sands in the Hiranyavati and Ganges rivers will be reborn in a later evil age and take resolute mind and conviction in this sutra. Let's see how far we go. Yeah, that's long enough. Okay, so I'm going to pause here and we'll go into part three. Hopefully, I'm making this a little bit less, how shall I say, mystical sounding, because it's not meant that way. It's simply meant to say, to say several things. Number one, respect that from which you came. Two, respect that your ability to understand this profoundly stands on the shoulders of all of the self-perceiving efforts made of previous generations in your own ancestry and in the ancestry of the world, because if you go back far enough, you start to understand more deeply how interrelated all of us are on this planet. All 8 billion of us come from a small group of people. So we're all related, and our ability to come to these teachings is all reflects all of that history, as we will reflect future history as much as there can be of it. So there's an additional responsibility on your practice. Yes, you need to attain your own Buddha nature. You need to see the preciousness of your own life, but not just from the end point, if you will, of all these processes that led to you, but the responsibility you have to integrate this knowledge deeply so that your influence, whether it's through offspring or relations with others, non-sexual, I guess I need to say, relations with others, the way that you distribute your understanding, this actually points to something else I should say, that it's not simply physical. And I guess this is something that Buddhism dances with all the time in this rhetoric, even though this is a translation, it comes through that physical reality isn't the only reality, that the conscious reality, the mind is influenced and influences. So we spawn offspring not only physically, but through our thoughts, through our shared perceptive reality, our minds. This is the Sangha. This is really the Sangha, is our relations through mind. Does that make sense? I guess my hope for this would be that you not only see the tremendous opportunity and value in your own practice from all of this history and all of these teachings, but you truly understand the self-teaching that's happening here for the tremendous impact that your moment-to-moment life has on the whole of life. That's so unfathomably huge. Don't let it stall you. Don't let it turn you inward. Understand that you're already integrated with it, and that there is a sort of a great freedom of your practice that says, don't keep this to yourself, because you're thwarting your greatest power, your influence for Buddhahood, to repel these evils that are being lauded and supported, to put a boundary to them and say, in here you do not cross. And if we can help that boundary grow through multiplying it in the people that we know and the things that we do, then they will be repelled further and further away until instead of being everywhere at the border, they become segmented into much lesser influences. Follow? That's Kozenrufu. Thank you so much for listening. I hope this is useful for your practice. I can't tell you how much I appreciate your participation. All of this, for those of you, here's the business. Of course, I'm demonetized. So I don't make anything to subsist from these videos other than subsisting in my Buddhahood. So for that, I can't express my appreciation. But for the samsaric reality of keeping these videos on air, creating them, putting them on my podcast, all of these things, they're all thanks to your direct efforts. I don't know how to appreciate you enough for that, but just know that you're in my thoughts constantly as I do these videos, as I read, as I do anything with regards to my Buddhist practice and our Sangha. You guys on Patreon/TLK, Kokoscopes/TLK, just through PayPal at PayPal.me/SifuSylvain. Any way that you could support me financially is deeply, deeply appreciated. Go to cafepress.com/Kuhn or Gohansun/Gohansun. Get yourself a Gohansun if you don't already have one. Start your practice. I have a library of books on Lulu. If you need to, there are links all over my threefoldlotus.com website to get these study materials. I don't make a lot of money off of those, but I get something. And in return, hopefully you get good practice materials to support your practice. There's all sorts of ways like that. I guess that's the bulk of them. I can't think of another way right now to help support these podcasts and these videos. So if you're able and willing, again, the whole Sangha thanks you. All right? Have a great day. Keep your practice strong. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. I'll see you in part 3. Bye for now.